Part 3. The Reckoning. Act 1. 1. Exterior. The Island Market. Afternoon. The snow is falling as hard as ever. The porch is almost completely buried beneath one huge, dune-like drift from floor to roof overhang. Parked in front is the big snow cat Mike and the others took out on the reprovisioning expedition. From its side door to the door of the market, a notch almost like a tunnel has been dug. The four men, Mike Anderson, Sonny Brodigan, Henry Bright, and Kirk Freeman, are just entering. 2. Interior, the market, by the cash registers, afternoon. The men make their way in, gasping and shedding snow. Sonny and Henry have shovels. We can see their breath in the air, and the place is very dim. Sonny.
Jenny's out.
Mike nods.
How long do you think?
Mike. Hard to tell. Since morning, anyway, from the way it feels, snow probably piled up and blocked the exhaust. He goes to the cash registers, bends beneath one, and begins to toss out big cardboard cartons. Mike. Sonny, Henry, your meat patrol. Get the big cuts of beef, plus the turkeys and chicken. The best stuff back in the freezer. Henry. Will it still be all right, do you think? Mike. Are you kidding? It won't even be thawed yet. Come on, let's go. Dark's gonna come early. Sonny and Henry start up toward the cooler and the freezer beyond. Kirk comes over to the checkout and takes one of the cartons. Mike. We'll stick to the canned goods this trip. All of us will come back for bread, potatoes, and vegetables, and milk. Little kids have to have milk. Kirk. You gonna tell him about what the guy's name spells when you move the blocks around? Mike. What good would it do? Kirk. I don't know. God, Mike, that gave me a chill. Mike. Me too. And for the time being, maybe we better just keep the chill to ourselves. We've still got at least one more night to get through. Kirk. But... Mike. Come on. Canned goods. Let's load up. He starts up the aisle containing the overturned card table, and after a moment or two's consideration, Kirk follows. 3. Exterior, the town hall, afternoon. We can barely see it in all the snow, but at regular intervals we can hear the blare of a horn. 4. Exterior, the parking lot, afternoon. The island services vehicle is idling here, not too far from the town hall's side door. It's not going to go anywhere. Not even a four-wheel drive can move in 5 feet of snow. But the lights are on, and we can see one man standing outside and another inside. The one behind the wheel is Hatch, the one outside wearing his VFD parka and peering anxiously into the snow is Ferd Andrews. The window between them is open. Snow is blowing into the cab of the truck, but at this point, neither man cares. Ferd cups his hands around his mouth and hollers into the shrieking wind as loud as he can. Ferd.
Angie Carver! Billy Timmons!
Hatch.
Any sign? Any at all?
Ferd.
No. Wouldn't I tell you? Keep blowing that thing.
Hatch continues to lay on the horn in long, measured beats. Ferd peers anxiously into the snow, then turns and yanks open the door. Ferd.
You watch and let me honk. Your eyes are better.
They change places. Hatch, squinting into the snow.
George Kirby. Janie Kingsbury, where are you guys?
Ferd keeps blowing the horn in long, measured blasts. 5. Interior. The town hall's makeshift daycare area. Afternoon. Sound. Muffled. The horn continues. The kids have finished picking up and don't really know what to do with themselves now. No one has noticed that Ralphie Anderson isn't among them. Sandra has gotten Cat quieted down and now looks restless herself. Cat sees this and offers Sandra a wan smile and a pat on the arm. Cat.
I'm okay. Go on up. Find your husband and little boy.
Sandra.
But the kids.
Cat gets up and approaches them. Sandra watches apprehensively. This is the young woman who beat her boyfriend to death not long ago. Cat.
Who wants to play Giant Step?
Heidi.
Yeah.
Sally Gotso.
Me. Yay, I do.
The kids start to line up facing Cat, only Buster Carver lags. Buster.
Where's my mommy?
Sandra.
I'll just peek and see if she's upstairs, shall I? Or your daddy?
Buster.
Yes, please, Mrs. Beals.
Pippa.
And send Don down. He always forgets to say, may I?
The others laugh gleefully, including Buster. Frank takes Buster's arm.
Come on, you play next to me. We'll be partners.
Buster starts, then stops.
Where's Ralphie?
There's a moment of nervousness as they all look around and realize Ralphie isn't there. Cat turns to Sandra, an eyebrow raised in question. Sandra.
He probably chased upstairs after Donnie to see if he could get a donut, too. I'll send them both down.
She goes upstairs. The other kids are satisfied with this explanation, except for Pippa, who is looking around with a frown.
Pippa. He didn't go upstairs with Donnie Beals. At least, I don't think he did.
Upton Bell comes over, grinning like the amiable fool he is. Sally Godso.
Who's blowing that horn, Mr. Bell?
Upton. Someone trying to call the snowbirds, I guess. Frank.
What are snowbirds?
Upton. You never heard of snowbirds? Kids.
No, no. What are they? Tell us.
Etc. Upton.
Oh, big as refrigerators they are. White as snow and tasty as the devil. But they only fly around when there's a big blizzard. Only time there's wind enough to give them the lift. To them a horn's just like a bird call. But they're cussed hard to catch just the same. Can I play too?
Kids.
Yeah, yeah, all right.
Etc. Pippa has been looking around for Ralphie, but now she joins in, distracted from her concern by her delight at having a grown-up who's willing to play the game with them. Cat.
Get right in line, Upton Bell. Just don't be smart, and don't forget to say, may I? Now, here we go. Frank Bright, take two helicopter steps.
Frank takes two steps forward, whirling around, flapping his arms, and making helicopter sounds. Kids.
You forgot to say, may I?
Grinning, shamefaced, Frank goes back. The camera moves away from the game to the closed door marked custodian. 6. Interior. The town meeting hall. Afternoon. Sound. Muffled. The horn continues. In the foreground, we see Molly Anderson sitting beside Jack Carver on one of those hard meeting benches, trying to soothe him. In the background, at the rear of the long room, is the buffet, where people are coming and going, getting coffee and snacks. Some look toward Molly and Jack, troubled and sympathetic, but not Robbie Beals and his son Don. They are eating donuts with a remarkable lack of concern. Robbie has coffee. Don is slurping a Coke. Jack.
I got to find her.
He makes an effort to rise, and Molly puts a hand on his arm, holding him where he is for the time being. Molly.
You know what it's like out there.
Jack.
She could be wandering around, freezing to death in a whiteout 50 yards from the building.
Molly.
And if you go out there, you'll be lost, too.
If they're there, they'll come to the horn, same as in a fog at sea. You know that. Jack.
I'll go out Spelford.
Molly.
Hatch said.
Jack.
Alton Hatcher can't tell me what to do. That's my wife out there.
She can't stop him this time, so she gets up with him. Behind them, Sandra comes in from the town office area, looks around, spots her husband and son. Molly.
Go to the truck, then, but just to the truck. Don't go wandering off on your own.
But Jack can promise her no such thing. He's totally distracted. Molly watches sadly as he goes up the aisle, then follows herself. Sandra, meanwhile, is looking around. She doesn't see Molly yet. Sandra, to Don.
Where's Ralphie?
Don, munching his donut.
I don't know.
Sandra.
But didn't he come upstairs with you?
Molly is in time to hear this and is, of course, immediately concerned. Don.
Nah, he is picking up with the rest of them. Dad, can I have another donut?
Molly, to Sandra.
He's not down there? What are you saying, that he's not with the others?
Sandra, flustered.
I didn't see. Cat started to cry. She dropped her cup and broke it.
Molly.
You were supposed to be watching them.
Sandra winces. She's been married to Robbie for 10 years and is used to being blamed when things go wrong. Robbie, the usual bluster.
I hardly think that tone is...
Molly ignores him.
You were supposed to be watching them.
She breaks for the stairs.
Ralphie! Ralphie!
7. Exterior, the Island Market, afternoon. The men are clustered at the Snowcat, handing loaded cartons to Mike, who stows them in the back. Mike shouts to be heard over the storm as the last box goes in. Mike. One more trip, Sonny. You and Henry get the bread and rolls. Everything on the shelves. Kirk, you want to grab at least 100 pounds of potatoes. I'll get the milk. Let's go. I want to get back as soon as we can. They go single file into the cut in the drift, Sonny and Henry Bright first, followed by Mike and Kirk. Sonny and Henry go inside. Mike is about to follow, then stops so suddenly that Kirk just about runs into him. Kirk. What the hell? Mike has stopped at the mannequin set up on the porch. Hatches joke at Robbie Beals' expense. The mannequin is now almost completely buried, and although the face is covered with wind-driven snow, and the figure is still dressed in the lobsterman's slicker, we can see it's not the same figure.
Mike brushes frozen snow away from the face. It's Mrs. Kingsbury. She's frozen solid. Kirk stares in dismay as Mike digs into the snow around the dummy's neck and pulls out a new joke sign, only now the joke is on them. Give me what I want, and I'll go away, it says. The two men stare at each other in horror. 8. Exterior, the town hall, afternoon. Sound of horn continues. Even regular blasts. Molly, voiceover.
Ralphie? Ralphie!
9. Interior, the daycare area of the basement, afternoon. Sound of horn, muffled. Molly is frantic, looking everywhere for Ralphie, who isn't here. Cat and Upton Bell have drawn together in fright. Robbie, Don, Tess Marchant, and Tavia Godso are on the stairs. Sally Godso sees her aunt and runs to her. The other children huddle, dismayed. Tippa.
I said he didn't go with Don.
All the other adults are gathering, some from the seats around the now useless TV, some from upstairs, some from the sleeping area. One is Ursula Godso, looking blasted with grief. Ursula.
Oh, God. What now?
Molly ignores her. She goes to Pippa, kneels in front of her, and grasps her gently by the arms. She peers into Pippa's frightened face. Molly.
Where was Ralphie when you saw him last, Pippa?
Pippa thinks about it, then points to the area between the stairs and the wall. Molly looks in that direction and sees the door marked custodian. There is total silence except for the muffled regular blasts of the horn, as Molly goes toward that door, afraid of what she may find. She reaches for the knob but can't bring herself to touch it, let alone turn it. Molly.
Ralphie? Ralphie, are you?
Ralphie, voice.
Mommy? Mom?
Oh, boy, the relief. It's as if somebody let the air out of everyone in the room, kids included. Molly's reserves of strength are gone. She begins to cry as she tears the door open. Ralphie is standing there in the custodian's closet, happy, excited, unhurt, and unaware there's been any fuss about him. His expression turns to one of puzzlement as his mother sweeps him up into her arms. In the general excitement, we may or may not notice that Ralphie has a small leather bag in one hand, the kind with a drawstring at the top. Ralphie.
Hey, Mom. What's up?
Molly.
What are you doing in there? You scared the life out of me.
Ralphie.
The man was in there. He wanted to see me.
Molly.
Man?
Ralphie.
The one Daddy arrested. Except I don't think he's a bad man, Mom, because...
Molly sets Ralphie down and sweeps him behind her so hard and fast that he almost falls over. Upton grabs the kid and hands him to Jonas Stanhope and Andy Robichaud, who have pushed their way to the front of the semicircle of watching adults. Molly takes two steps into the doorway of the custodian's closet and looks at... 10. Interior. Custodian's closet, from Molly's point of view. There's plenty of cleaning gear on the shelves, plus the usual complement of brooms, mops, extra fluorescent light bars, and there's no other exit. But there's no man. 11. Interior. Resume Molly. She starts to turn back to Ralphie, then stops as something catches her eye. She goes into the closet instead. 12. Interior. The custodian's closet with Molly. In the far corner is a piece of green paper. It's a flyer for the Anderson's Market advertising this week's specials. She picks it up and turns it over. Printed in red letters on the back is, "Give me what I want and I'll go away." Andy Robichaud has stepped into the closet. She hands him the flyer. Molly.
But what does he want?
Andy can only shake his head. Molly leaves the closet. 13. Interior, the basement daycare area. Molly goes to Ralphie, who is standing with the other kids. They shrink back from him, thinking he's in trouble. Ralphie looks up at his mom, clutching the little drawstring bag and hoping like mad that he's not in trouble. Molly.
Where did he go, Ralphie? Where did the man go?
Ralphie peers past her into the closet. Ralphie.
I don't know. He must have disappeared when I turned my back.
Don, from the stairs.
There's no door in there for a guy to go out of, Dumkins.
Molly.
Shut up, Don Beals.
Don, unaccustomed to such real sharpness from Molly, shrinks back against his dad. Robbie opens his mouth to say something reproving, then decides this might not be the best time. Molly kneels in front of her son as she did in front of Pippa, and for the first time sees what he has, a finely made little bag of chamois leather. Molly.
What's this, Ralphie?
Ralphie.
It's a present. He gave me a present. That's why I don't think he can be a bad man, like on TV, because bad men don't give kids presents.
Molly looks at the bag as if it might be a bomb, but she remains calm and soothing. She has to be. Ralphie doesn't know what the deal is here, but he can see the faces surrounding him and feel the atmosphere in the room. The poor kid is on the verge of tears. Molly takes the bag.
What is it? Let Mommy...
Joanna Stanhope, near hysterics.
Don't open it! Don't open it! It might be a bomb. It could explode.
Jonas.
Be quiet, Joni.
Too late. A couple of the kids, Heidi and Sally perhaps, start to sniffle. All the adults take a step backward. We are seeing the leading edge of an ugly building hysteria here, but given all that's happened, who can blame these people for being a bit hysterical?
Cat. Don't, Molly. Don't.
Molly looks at the bag. Its bottom hangs down in a teardrop shape, weighted by whatever is inside it. Perhaps she touches its lowest hanging curve. Ralphie.
It's all right, Mom. Don't be scared.
Molly.
You know what this is, Ralphie?
You've looked? Ralphie.
Sure. We even had a game, me and Mr. Linoge. He says those are special, the most special in the world. And he said I should share them because they're not just for me, they're for everyone. Everyone on the island.
Molly takes the bag. As she starts to open the drawstring top, the man with the black shirt and turned around collar under his sport coat steps forward and puts a hand on her shoulder. This is Bob Riggins, the minister. Reverend Bob Riggins.
I don't think I'd open that, Mrs. Anderson, given the dreams we all had last night and the possible nature of this man.
Molly. No, I suppose you wouldn't, Reverend Riggins. But since he's had his filthy hands on my son twice...
She opens the bag and looks in. The others watch breathlessly. Molly sees a child's cap nearby and dumps the contents of the drawstring bag into it. Frank Bright, coming closer to peek.
Hey, neat!
Not surprisingly, he thinks so. It's a present any little kid would like. The camera moves in for a closer look. In the hat are almost a dozen stones as smooth and round as marbles. All of them are white, except for one. The odd one is black, shot through with twists of red, and should remind us of Linoja's eyes. Molly looks up and meets Melinda Hatcher's eyes. Neither of them know what Ralphie's present means, but Melinda pulls Pippa closer to her, needing to be comforted by her daughter's presence. 14. Exterior, the intersection of Main and Atlantic. Afternoon. Slowly, fighting for every foot it makes through the storm, comes the Snowcat, bound back to the town hall from the market. 15. Interior, the Snowcat. Afternoon. The four men, Mike, Sonny, Henry, and Kirk, are wedged tightly into the cab. The groceries are in the cargo compartment behind them. The men are grim-faced, shaken by what they have seen. They ride in silence, jouncing through the drifts for a while. Then at last, Sonny.
Just old Mrs. K. None of the others. Where do you suppose they are? George and Angie and Bill Timmons.
No one answers.
How did he get her down there?
No one answers.
Where's the dummy? Anybody see that in the store?
No answer.
How'd he get her down there in this?
Henry.
Let it go, Sonny.
For a moment or two, Sonny does. Then he turns to Mike. Sonny.
Why is this happening? Your lay reader for Reverend Riggins down at the Methodist Church always got a quote from the good book handy. You must have some idea why this is happening.
Mike thinks about it, guiding the Snowcat through the desolate white driftscape that used to be Main Street. Mike. You know the story about Job in the Bible? Sonny and the others nod. Well, here's the part that never got written down. After the contest for Job's soul is over and God wins, Job gets down on his knees and says, Why did you do this to me, God? All my life I worshipped you, but you destroyed my livestock, blighted my crops, killed my wife and my children, and gave me 100 horrible diseases, all because you had a bet going with the devil. Well, okay, but what I want to know, Lord, all your humble servant wants to know is, why me? So he waits, and just when he's about made up his mind, God isn't going to answer, a thunderhead forms in the sky, and lightning flashes, and this voice calls down, Job, I guess there's just something about you that pisses me off. Sonny, Henry, and Kirk look at Mike, not knowing what to think. Sonny actually looks dumbfounded. Mike, does that help you? No answer from the others. Me either. Sound. Faint. Rhythmic blasts of the horn. Kirk. Still looking for him. Sonny. Thinking of Mrs. K.
Good luck.
16. Exterior, Main Street, with the Snowcat. Afternoon. Slow but steady wins the race. They haven't reached the town hall yet, but it's starting to appear that they will make it. Sound. The horn. 17. Exterior, beside the town hall with the Island Services vehicle. Afternoon. Ferd is now in the passenger seat while Hatch hits the horn in those long blasts. Jack Carver is lurching in frantic circles around the truck, tumbling into drifts, picking himself up, peering into the howling blizzard. Jack.
Angie? Angie, over here!
He has screamed himself hoarse, but he can't give up. At last he stumbles back to the open driver's side window of the vehicle, doubled over and gasping for breath. His face is red and running with sweat that has already frozen to a cruel glaze from the corners of his lips all the way down to his chin. Hatch.
Get in, Jack. Warm up.
Jack.
No. She's out here someplace. Keep hitting that horn.
18. Interior. Angle on Ferd. In the passenger seat. He sits up, eyes widening as the conversation continues to his left. He can't believe what he's seeing. Hatch.
You better sit down before you fall down.
Jack, snarling.
My wife's out there, and she's alive. I can feel it. So you just keep working that horn.
Hatch.
Jack, I really don't think...
Ferd raises a hand that trembles with excitement. His face is incredulous. Ferd.
Hatch. Jack. Look.
19. Exterior. The snowfield. From the Island Services vehicle's point of view. It's a screaming whiteout, but a figure is lurching and stumbling around in the flying murk. It could be the figure of a woman. 20. Exterior. Resume Island Services vehicle with Jack, Hatch, and Ferd.
Hatch.
Dear God. Oh, my dear God. Is that one of them?
Ferd.
I can't tell.
Jack, transported with hope.
Angie!
He begins to stumble toward the looming, indistinct figure. He falls, rolls in the snow, and lunges to his feet again. Behind him, Hatch gets out of the truck. In the background, Ferd is doing the same on his side. Hatch.
Jack, wait. That might not be.
But it's useless. Jack is already melting into the snow himself, closing in on that wavering, stumbling figure. Hatch starts after him. So does Ferd. 21. Exterior. Jack Carver. Afternoon. He somehow keeps moving forward, crying his wife's name over and over. Hatch can't keep up, and Ferd is running a dead last. But now we can see that the figure is a woman. As Jack closes in, the woman falls herself, going face down in the snow. Jack.
Angie! Honey!
The woman works to get to her feet, moving with the mechanical determination of a clockwork figure. And as she finally makes it, we see that it really is Angie Carver. But what a change. Buster's pretty mom is a thing of the past. This lurching, blank-faced creature looks 70 instead of 28, and the hair flying out behind her has gone gray. Her eyes stare straight ahead through the snow, taking no notice of her husband. Her snow-coated face is pale and lined. Jack embraces her.
Angie, honey. Oh, Angie, we've been looking for you. Buster's so worried, honey.
He covers her face with kisses as he talks, constantly giving her little strokes and pats and touches the way a parent will do with a child who has just had a close call. At first, Jack is so relieved that he doesn't realize she isn't responding. Then it starts to get through to him. Jack.
Angie? Honey?
He draws back, really seeing her for the first time, seeing the glazed blankness in her eyes and seeing the gray hair that used to be black. He reacts with horror and amazement. Hatch comes stumbling up, badly winded. Ferd is bringing up the rear, and now we hear the rumble of the snowcat returning from its marketing expedition. Jack.
Angie, what happened to you? What's wrong?
He looks at Hatch, but there's no help there. Hatch is also stunned by the change in her. So's Ferd. Jack turns back to his wife and takes her by the shoulders. Jack.
What happened, Ange? What did he do to you? Where did he take you? Where are the others? Do you know?
A large yellow eye looms out of the snow. The headlamp of the snowcat. Angie sees it, and as Mike pulls up, it seems to break her loose from the deep daze she's been in. Her gaze moves to her husband and begins to fill with frantic fear. Angie.
We have to give him what he wants.
Jack.
What, honey? I couldn't hear you.
Hatch. He heard just fine.
Lenoge?
The doors of the snowcat open. Mike and the others get out and begin floundering toward Hatch, Ferd, and the Carvers. Angie takes no notice. She stares only at Jack, and when she speaks, she does so with rising hysteria. Angie.
Lenoge. Yes, him. We have to give him what he wants. He sent me back to tell you.
That's the only reason he didn't let me fall. So, I tell you, we have to give him what he wants. Do you understand? We have to give him what he wants.
Mike takes her by the shoulder and turns her toward him. Mike, what does he want, Angela? Did he tell you? At first, she doesn't answer. They cluster around her, waiting, anxious. Angie.
He said he'll tell us tonight. He said we're going to have a special town meeting, and he'll tell us then. He said that if some folks don't want to go along, don't want to do what's best for the town, that they should be reminded of the dreams we had last night. That they should be reminded of what happened in Roanoke. That they should remember Croatan, whatever that is.
Mike, perhaps to himself. His name, maybe. His real name. Angie turns back to Jack.
Take me inside. I'm freezing, and I want to see Buster.
Jack. Sure. He puts an arm around her and leads her slowly back toward the town hall. Mike goes to Hatch. Mike. Any sign of Bill Timmons or George Kirby? Hatch. No. Janie Kingsbury either. Mike. Jane Kingsbury's dead. To Sonny. Take it in, would you? Sonny climbs up into the cab of the Snowcat and revs the engine. Mike and Hatch start to walk toward the town hall, Mike telling Hatch about Mrs. K. 22. Exterior, the side of the town hall, high angle, afternoon. From here we can barely see the line of islanders, trudging slowly back to the buildings through the drifts. They look like ants on safari across a desert of sugar. The Snowcat, piloted by Sonny Brodigan, drives slowly past them toward the building. We hold on this, then fade to black. This ends Act 1.